Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Take a trip down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear as PSP rides again. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium with your hosts, Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium. My name is Michael Norris, and as always, I am joined by my lovely co-hosts, Bobby Simmons and Jerry Oates. How are you guys doing this evening?
I'm doing good, guys.
I'm doing wonderful. Lovely. Where'd that come from?
Oh, I'm just buttering you guys up.
Trying to be nice.
Yeah. I'm still sweating. I'm going to go in there and by myself one of these Thursday nights. You guys give me about 10 minutes before you call in and laugh at me. I got a couple of public service announcements to get out of the way before we get into the show good. Just to remind everybody that 2 weeks from tomorrow is the 20th or 25th, Bobby, the reunion? It's the 20th, isn't it?
The 20th of what? Oh, you're talking about the
Gulf Coast reunion. Yeah, 20th anniversary. It's our 20th Gulf Coast Wrestlers reunion. Will be, as I said, 2 weeks from Friday. And anybody who has not been, I certainly encourage anybody who has been in the wrestling business or is currently in the wrestling business as a wrestler, referee, announcer, promoter, please join us. You guys will have the time of your life. And we're doing something special this year. We're raffling off a belt that Dave Milliken, with Reggie Parks, is partnering in the belt making business. They have made a replica of the original Gulf Coast belt that was introduced here in 1957, and that thing is beautiful. We had a board meeting last Saturday at Bob Kelly's house, and he's got the belt there at his house, and so it's just absolutely gorgeous, and we're raffling it off, and I'm telling you, as Bobby has said several times, once you come to one of these, you'll always come back. And I especially encourage people who are currently in the business, because you can walk around the facility where we have the reunion or at the motel and pop your head in the door, and I guarantee you within 15 minutes you'll get 10 or 15 decades worth of education just from the stories and everything people tell. And it's a wonderful time. I look forward to it every year, and I just want to encourage each and everybody who have been in the wrestling business or currently in the wrestling business, please join us here in Mobile for that. And also another thing, I got a call from Bill Bowman a little while ago, and he let me know that Joe Turner, who has been on our show a couple of times, or several times, I should say, with Bill and on his own a couple of times, his lady friend, and I'm sorry, I'm horrible with names. I cannot remember the lady's name. I've met her a couple of times. But she is having surgery tomorrow morning. She's evidently got some clogging in some of her arteries and everything, and she is going to have some surgery done tomorrow. So let's keep Joe and her in our thoughts and prayers, and hopefully we'll see her through that successfully. That's all I got. You guys got any announcements?
I know Bobby's got something.
I was just thinking, you know, he invited people that was in the wrestling business or have been. What about those of us that can't remember?
Oh, we did do one thing, too, at the board meeting. We did take a vote and voted that Charlie Smith cannot win this raffle.
Well, that's good. As long as Charlie's not in the ring. Yeah. If a board member wins, then I'm gonna think something's up here.
That belt is gorgeous. My only concern is I'm afraid that one of these independent guys, and this is no knock on them because they're certainly a welcome addition to our reunion. But I'm afraid one of them will win and be defending it that night somewhere, like in Battle of Badger or somewhere. Another thing, I don't know if you guys realize it, but this past Monday, the 20th, was the 36th, I hate to say anniversary because that sounds like something joyous, but it was the 36th anniversary of Bobby Shane's death. It's hard to believe it's been that long ago.
I remember that like it was yesterday.
Me too.
Did you ever work with him, Jerry?
Yeah, many times.
Working around, how was he? I mean, I know because I was a kid watching him here when he was in here, and I know what he was like as far as a fan's perspective. But how was he as a worker to work with?
Bobby was a good worker. Bobby was stiff as a board, but he was a good worker. Very good. I was in Ted now in Kansas City when we. They called, Geigel called us that Thursday morning and told us that the plane went down and Bobby didn't make it. And it was really sad. I mean, Bobby had a great future ahead of him. He had a good head on him, and he would have done a lot of great things, I think, for what we did. For what we did. I really believe that.
I can remember what I... What a horrible is not the word, but what a sad the next night in the dressing room, or the night we found out about it. What a horrible, just gloomy feeling. Whenever something like that happened, I mean, the reality of what we did and how much we traveled kind of popped up to the forefront of our thoughts. And even though we had lost a friend and a colleague, you know, you think, man. There, but for the grace of the good Lord, could have been me, or you, or anybody else. And it was a very sad time.
And all the guys liked Bobby. You know, he was it was just a horrible waste. I mean, it's just a tragedy. It was just, you know, Bobby to die that young. It was just horrible.
And Bobby, have you heard anything about him possibly coming into Georgia as? To help with the book, because I know he had just got back, had only been back in the States a couple months from, a year or so in Australia when Barnett was there. And Barnett actually had him, he was either a co-booker or a booker there. And the story that I'd always heard was that there was talk of him coming into Georgia to possibly help with the book in Georgia. Do you know anything about that?
At the time that happened, I was referee, and I was not working. I mean, I was working in the office in it. I was taking care of certain things, but I wasn't working in the back with Barnett. Doug Smith was still Barnett's office manager at the time, so I really didn't have privy to what the plans were. I had not heard any rumors to that effect.
And Jarrett was involved in all that dealings because he was, I guess, part of the deal with, at least from what I've heard, of Barnett buying into the Georgia office was Jarrett was trying to broker a deal to sell Australia to Buddy Fuller. And for whatever reason, that all fell apart. But
that was 1970.
Except for Barnett's in.
That was in 1970.
Was it that early? I was thinking it was around the same time.
That was 1970 because I was in Florida and Dickie was part of the deal and.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, caught up. I had passports, everything. We were going there to live. And I sold everything I had. Him and my sister sold everything they had. And I made my way up from Orlando to Georgia. And I was up here, and they were coming a few days after me. He called me one night after I got to Columbus. And he said, the deal's off. What are you talking about, the deal's off? I'm not booked anywhere. I'm finished up in Florida. I just started down there, finished up there. I got no job, no nothing. But somehow or another, it fell through with Barnett, him and Fuller, and I think Eddie was involved in it, Eddie Graham, and it just, I don't know, it went south anyhow. So
I'll tell you something. The names you're mentioning there, and like I say, I worked for Barnett a long time, and he was good to me. But I'll tell you when you're dealing with him and Eddie Graham and Buddy Fuller and those guys, everything that those guys touched turned to gold. Anything they were involved with, they made money. But they all had egos.
I think Barnett was ready to go, and I never did hear of what happened.
I don't know either, but I know you. When you got those guys, if you're talking about the kind of money that would have been changing hands, and I mean, it's just it's just hard for me. I know when Barnett bought into Florida, he would fly down there a couple of days a month and go to the office, and. Charlie Tanaka, that used to answer the phone there at the office in Florida, what a funny guy he was. And you would call down there. I would have to call down there. If I needed Jim for something, I'd call down there. And he'd say, "Brother," he said, "you don't really want to talk to none of them folks right now." He said, "they upstairs yelling at one another."
Oh,
I mean, it was just a powder keg anytime you got that bunch together.
Oh, man, there were so many hands in the pod down there. Bob.
Oh, God. And everybody thought their idea was the best idea. I mean, that was just the nature of the beast, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you who had a head on him. I don't know if y'all ever worked for him or was ever around him. Was Eddie Graham.
Yeah.
Oh.
Never worked for him.
Oh, he was, his mind for what we did was, I'd hear it. And he had a mind for it. He did wonders with Florida. And he was really
you could definitely tell the difference in the product, the shows and everything, between that and a lot of the other territories. Florida and Georgia was right there with it. And I think the tie-in there was with Gordon Solie, the way it was presented. You know, just made a world of difference. You know,
oh,
they didn't have, if they had Solie, they didn't have a local weatherman doing the wrestling shows, and it just made a world of difference.
He made that TBS show. There's no doubt. I mean, he did. He just had that gift, and it showed.
Gordon had an air of legitimacy about him. He could sell an Eskimo snowshoes. I mean, it didn't matter what we did and how off the wall somebody did something or how off the beaten path somebody might get in an interview or in something they would do in the ring, Gordon had a way of bringing it right back to level ground and selling it as what it was, you know, wrestling.
And he did that with no effort.
None whatsoever.
It just flowed, didn't it, Bobby? I mean,
you
sit there with your tongue hanging out. How did he come up with that? I mean, he was good. He was wonderful and a nice man.
I don't know if anybody, if you guys look at it or not, but Rich Tate has brought back a feature on the Georgia Wrestling History website called the Clip of the Day. And a couple of days ago, he had a little clip from a Georgia show with Rock Hunter was managing somebody. I don't remember even who was in the ring, but they did the deal where Rock pulled a rag out of his pants and he poured something on it and he jumped up on the edge of the ring and he wrapped it around Tony Atlas's face and Tony just passed out. He went down. And of course, whoever he was, you know, I think he was managing Ivan Koloff and Alexis Smirnoff. Yeah. And they won the Georgia heavyweight, the tag team titles off this match on TV. So the TV, basically, it goes down. You can tell that they stopped the tape, and the tape comes back up, and Tony's laying in the ring, and there's guys in there helping him. And they cut to Gordon, and Gordon is surrounded by about 10 or 12 of the fans out of the audience. And it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen because I can just imagine what's going through his mind because he's talking to these people, and they're explaining what they saw, and it was absolutely hilarious. It's on the website, and it's from two or three, 4 days ago. But if you get a chance, you ought to check that out. It was really funny. But Gordon, here again, some guy, you know, these people are telling what they think happened, And Gordon is just being as calm and being himself, and it just it come right across as very real.
You know, I watched that clip, and the whole time I watched it, I kept, especially when he was talking to the people from the audience, I'm wondering if Hunter actually had something that gave off an odor, or if Gordon selling it convinced those fans that they were smelling something.
He probably had water in that can.
Probably.
The one guy said, "Yeah, I smelled it as ether."
And the lady that was, she was a nurse from Tampa, Florida, and she knows what ether smells like. It is that is absolutely one of the best things. You couldn't get people to do that now; they'd be mugging for the camera so much. And the thing is, these people were serious. These people were not plants; they were serious, and they bought every bit of it.
Yes, sir.
One other thing, Jerry and I were talking about before we got on the air, but before you called in, I don't know if you've heard it or not, but one of the rumors that's floating is the possibility of Bob Armstrong being voted into the WWE Hall of Fame when they come to Atlanta.
Haven't heard that, but did Bob ever work for them up there?
I don't think that's a criteria anymore, to be honest.
Well, the thing that, I saw the other night, I was flipping channels and watching some of Monday Night Raw, and I seen that they voted Jim Duggan in. Well, I like Jim Duggan. He's a nice fellow, but how he would get in the Hall of Fame, I have no clue, because he's about as stiff as that board he talks around, he walks around with. But anyway, the thing with Bob, I've said all along, if they're going to have that thing here, which they are, they need to induct someone that, represents this part of the world. I mean, this was they can say what they want to, man. New York was what it was, but this was the hotbed for wrestling in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Yeah. And, it was Georgia that people were talking about, not New York.
Yeah.
So Armstrong would be good. I would be proud for Bob if he got some recognition.
I would too.
I wouldn't have a problem with that at all. I don't think they're going to call me.
Tremendous worker. Well, Jerry's from Georgia. Let me induct Jerry. We'll start
I can't even get in the Georgia Wrestling Hall of Fame. Much less the New York Wrestling Hall of Fame. Come on, man.
We're gonna start a Facebook campaign for you, Jerry. Put you
Don't do me any favors.
Do you have any old tapes? That seems to be the criteria. If you've got tapes to sell Vince, he'll put you in his Hall of Fame. So maybe Bob's got some old Southeastern stuff laying around. He booked for Fuller for so many years. And that's one thing about Bob Armstrong. He was a tremendous worker, tremendous on the microphone, but a lot of things that gets overlooked by him or about him was what a good booker he was. For all those years of working for Fuller, both in Knoxville and especially Mobile, probably the hottest angles that at least on the lower end of Southeastern that I witnessed, Bob was a booker, and he was a tremendous booker, and had a good mind, had great finishes, could kept the territory hopping, and I think that's one thing that he doesn't get enough credit for.
Well, just to say one thing about McMahon doing whoever he puts in, I don't care who he puts in, it makes no difference to me. It don't put any bread on my table, but. It's not going to happen, but if he was to call me and say, you and your brothers were...
Hang on a minute, David.
And you, huh?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. She's walking by, and she's got her little oxygen line got wrapped around my leg. I'm afraid I'm going to trip her here.
And, y'all were from Georgia. Y'all were this. Y'all did that. Went to Japan, the champ. Y'all did this and this, and we'd like to induct you in the Hall of Fame. I would turn him down. I'm sitting at home just like a lot of other guys, like you guys. We have no connection to the business at all on account of him. There are no more territories. None of us can work for an office to run a town or to you know, to do publicity. We were pushed out of the business on account of him. Everybody forgets that. And this isn't sour grapes. This is just how I feel about what he's done to the business and all the people he put out of business.
That's not sour grapes, my friend. That's truth. That's
well, it hurts, Bobby. You know, I mean, I still love what we did.
Yep.
And look how many promotions were put out of business. And like we've talked about this. And, you know, that wouldn't feed my ego unless he's going to give me, you know, $50,000 to come up there and induct me in. Then I might think about it. But for me to go up there, I would look like a hypocrite. Because I was at TV in Atlanta that Saturday that it all ended. I was there. That was the end of it, as we knew it.
That it was. That it was.
So, but you know, people don't.
Yeah, in the long run, though, he's hurt himself because there's, you know, and there's no doubt that the guys that work for him now are probably better athletes than most of the guys from our day because of what they have to put their bodies through. But the thing is, they're rushed. They don't know how to learn the business. And well, you know, what our business was doesn't exist anymore anyway to learn.
That's right.
But those guys, you know, they take a guy, you know, this guy looks good and everything. He's learned a few things from either Steve Kern or whoever else they've got running some little small territory. And they stick him on TV. They have somebody who knows nothing about the wrestling business do everything from choose his name to what he's going to say to what kind of outfit he's going to wear. It's all designed. Okay, guy will fit in this outfit, so here's what we're going to do. Then, if the crowd doesn't pop for him in 2 months, well, we've got nothing else for him to do, and out the door he goes.
Where's
he going to go?
He's not going anywhere.
There's nowhere for him to go.
If they were that smart, if they was as smart as they say they are, since they're the only game in town, really. DNA, that's another story. But if you have WrestleMania, that's supposed to be your biggest thing of the year, right? I've seen them advertise Liberace, Pete Rose, and God knows Bob Uecker. Why do you have to bring an outsider who people don't even watch it and give them a $250,000 payday to help draw a house, you know, after it's supposed to be your biggest thing? I guess I'm that far behind. You know, I don't see the opening night of World Series him having Hulk Hogan down there holding his hand up to his ear on a pitcher's mound. I mean, that's the way I look at it. I guess I'm wrong.
Well, that kind of goes
Donald
hand in hand.
Donald Trump in there, you know. Does it take all that to draw a house? I don't know.
Well, it kind of goes hand in hand with something that I've always, and of course, you know, I never understood why we, as in our business, had to put the boxer over as being tougher than we were. I had nothing against Joe Louis or Jersey Joe Walcott being a special referee, but why should the biggest heel in your territory run from this guy when he balls his fist up?
Thank you.
Why should the football player that wrestles in the off season to supplement his income, why should the guys that get out there and bust their butts every night have to put this guy over and make him look wonderful? You know, I mean, that's one thing I never understood. And I'm sure, I mean, I know it was, you know, the bookers were trying to make money and the promoters were trying to make money. But I never understood. I mean, it made the wrestler look bad. And I never understood that.
You never will, and I won't either.
Yeah.
I don't know why, you know, you got to bring in outsiders to, I don't know.
This is totally jumping the shark because I'm going to go way off base here with this one. When they promoted that card where they had Inoki against Ali and they had Chuck Wepner against Andre the Giant, well, you can kind of figure that, you know, Andre's going to do something because, you know, Wepner's not going to, you know that guy's not going to beat him. You knew
right.
That. But the other match, Inoki spent 15 rounds, or however they determined how long they went, on his back, kicking his feet up in the air. Did you ever see the thing, Jerry?
I saw it, and I almost cried.
I mean, it just absolutely.
He's like a fiddler crab.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've never. And the thing was, I mean, anybody you talk to, I mean, the boxer, wrestler, anybody you talk to will agree that if a wrestler that is worth his salt gets his hand on a boxer and gets him off his feet, the wrestler has the advantage.
I would have put Jack Briscoe against any boxer you could have come up with.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, you know, that, and for that, I mean, I just never understood that.
I didn't either. I didn't.
I mean, that was a no-win situation to me.
You can't compare the two. You know, are we going to just see who's the best man, or is the wrestler going to box him, or is the boxer going to wrestle him? You know, I mean, it's like getting Albert Pujols against who's a great quarterback, Tom
Joe
Brady.
Montana, you know.
Yeah, you get them to do what against each other?
Yeah.
You can't compare the two.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Well, Frankie Kane gave me a piece of advice one time, and he told me, he said, and this was after one of them nights where some guy jumped in the ring and we, you know, we had to take care of him, but he told me, he said, give you a piece of advice. He said, if a guy ever comes at you and he goes to wrestle you, he said, punch him. He said, if a guy ever comes at you and he's going to punch you, wrestle him.
That makes sense.
He said, just do just the opposite. He said, either way, you can't lose. And just I've always, you know, kind of kept that in the back part of my brain. And you know, I just, there again, that kind of got way off subject, but there again, too, you put these guys over. I agree. You bring the celebrity. Why? Why? It makes them look more important than your wrestlers.
It does. And ain't no telling what he pays them.
No.
More than the boys. So.
Well, you know, go back. Was it the first WrestleMania when they had Mr. T involved?
Yeah.
Yep. Why? I mean,
I don't know.
And, it's, you know, I heard Orndorff say that, you know, him and Piper got less money than Hogan and Mr. T, and you know, I mean, they were just as important as in that scenario as anybody was.
It's just like before we went on the air, Bobby was talking about he bringing Dwayne Johnson back. Is that for the WrestleMania, or is that boy not going to get any more movie contracts, or is he broke, or what?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know either.
I wouldn't be risking it. I know that. I had the opportunity to make movies as opposed to getting in there with somebody that may hurt me because they don't know what they're doing.
I don't get it.
Well, I will say this. I was watching Monday night when he came out. He's been gone 7 years, and he got a bigger pop than the guys that have been there every week.
What does that tell you?
I'm telling
they
you.
They are not growing. I don't care what they say. I don't care what those houses look like when you turn them on. They can't be. Let me tell you something. I went to the dentist this morning. I stopped and got gas. It was 3:18. I was at the dentist office maybe 45 minutes. I come right back by the same gas station. 45 minutes later, it was 3:29.
Jeez.
And people are not going to have money to go and do that.
Nope.
Well, to get us on our subject for tonight, what I wanted to talk
about. Why should we
about,
do that tonight?
This is part of you, because you brought this up. You've been ribbing me every week about pulling names out of the hat and throwing them at you. I got some names to throw at you tonight, buddy.
You said, listen, you're talking about getting on the subject. Well, you can really tell we've been around a long time, because we have waltzed around for 30 minutes and we ain't even locked up yet.
And I already blew her up, though.
Makes you
But, you know, every territory had the guys that I call homesteaders that were either local guys there that, and I'm not talking about the guys like me that just did the TV and you know, did a couple of house shows here and there that, we're talking about guys that were local that got somewhat of pushes for whatever reason, whether they were related to somebody or, you know, they just never left the territory Probably the best example I can think of that is Ron and Don Wright and Whitey Caldwell in East Tennessee. I mean, those guys were up there for 20 years and never worked anywhere but East Tennessee, and you know, became legends. There were guys here in the Gulf Coast. One that I can think of off the top of my head was a guy by the name of Billy Hamilton that was a local guy from Gulfport that never worked anywhere except for Lee Fields. Other than one, he went on one trip to Japan. But other than that, he never worked anywhere. He worked for Lee Fields for 20 years, or this territory for 20 years. Billy Hamilton.
Billy, I don't ring a bell.
He worked over Mississippi under the hood as Tiger Hamilton. He worked without the mask over here under his real name, Billy Hamilton. But he was a local contractor, did construction work over in Gulfport, still does as far as I know, and just wrestled at night. But Georgia had its share, and I just made a list of people who's, you know, some of them would venture off for a couple weeks, you know, but they'd always end up back in Georgia and pretty much stay there for various reasons. As I said, they may have been related to the promoter, or they had a full-time job there and just wrestled at night. But some of the names, when I decided to do this, the first name I thought of was Choo Choo Lin. And I don't know what his story was. You know, he only seemed to work for Fred Ward's town, so I'm assuming he was another in-law of Fred Ward.
No. Choo Choo, he worked for the railroad forever, since he was a young boy, and he'd retired from the railroad, and he was from Macon, and he helped Mr. Ward, you know, promote Macon and do what he could. But you're right that he might have come to Columbus a few times in all those years, but he just really wrestled. I don't even know if he ever went to Atlanta, did he, Bobby?
Not that I know of. I was to say, the big train, he was a nice fellow, but he probably wasn't in great demand for his wrestling ability outside of Macon. But he was, you know, one of the great Choo Choo Lin lines. He promoted Dudley, Georgia for Mr. Ward one time, which was a little town right outside of Dublin. And Mr. Ward always started his matches at 8:15, and it was about 8 o'clock, and there was about 10 people in the building. And I mean, we had the main event that night was Rocky Johnson and Ray Candy against somebody, and I don't even remember who they were with. But we're sitting in the dressing room and we're looking, and nobody's got dressed. We're just looking, and so Choo Choo goes, "Well, I got to go call Mr. Ward and see what he wants to do." And honest to goodness, if there was 10 people there, I may be stretching that a little bit. And he comes back down through there and he goes, "Bobby," he says, "you need to get dressed." He said, "We're gonna run," and I said, "Really?" And he went, "Yeah." He said, "Mr. Ward is afraid if we don't run, we're going to hurt Macon." And so we ran with about 10 people in the building. So, but yeah, Choo Choo was a nice guy. He just, I was really, where did we see him at? He showed up. We were having a get together for somebody, and he showed up. Might have been when we did that thing for two. Did he come to that thing for two we did in Macon, Jerry? Didn't he show up over there?
That's exactly where we saw him.
That's the last time I saw Choo Choo.
That's the last time
I saw him. It had been many years since I had seen him, but he came to the thing we had for two. Yeah.
Yep, you're right. That's the last time I saw Train, yep. But I like Choo Choo. You know, Choo Choo was Choo Choo, and that was a good one, Mike. Hit us with another one.
Yep.
Okay. Of course, talking about Fred Ward, you got to mention Leon Ogle. I know Leon, you know, he would venture off every once in a while. He was down here in Mobile for about 3 weeks. And, in fact, you probably passed him, Bobby. He was down here right after you left in 77. He came in and was here for about 3 weeks. I know he worked the legendary match against George Gulas in Tampa when evidently both of them were on vacation down there.
Yeah,
Grand decided to have them work a 15-minute Broadway.
Yeah, he worked a 15-minute Broadway between Leon. We used to have the tape there in the Atlanta office. It was Leon against George Gulas, and it was an opening match on a Tuesday night in Tampa. And they said everybody on the card got dressed and was standing outside the dressing room to watch the opening match that night.
He also wore Louisiana. He was out there when I was there.
Oh,
that's the only place I. Yeah, yeah. That was it though. But he only wrestled Columbus and Macon and Albany and, you know, a little bit of stuff.
Now Leon, there's another. He's a super nice guy. And don't you think for a minute Leon wasn't a tough sucker? I mean, somebody broke into his house one time. Well, you tell the story, Jerry, but you were living there too when it happened. But somebody broke into his house and didn't walk away from it.
Beat him to death.
Sure
did. I can't say everything, but I mean, I know, but I'm not gonna say it on the radio. But I mean, he did. He beat the guy to death, and caught the other brother running through the house, caught him out in the backyard, and worked him over. And the one that eventually died, he died like the next day in the hospital. I mean, and the guy was going to steal his video camera. And before the police got there, Leon took the camera and took pictures in his kitchen. I'm telling y'all, guys, it looked like something in a horror movie. There was blood on the walls, all over the table, on the floors, chairs turned over. Mm. He worked that guy over. And then they were from Valdosta, I think, Bobby, these two brothers. They were running a racket up there in Columbus, you know, just robbing and breaking
in.
And Leon just happened to come home. He opens the garage door and goes in. The guy says, "What you doing here?" Now, that's when it started. He worked them guys over. Anyhow, he got I forgot what night that was, but he got a death threat the next Wednesday. If he was in the ring, somebody was going to kill him. You know, Leon was refereeing a lot then, and of course, they pulled him out of the ring, and he would go with me to Macon, and he would ride with me to Albany and carry a gun, and but it all blew over, you know. And but Bobby was right. Leon wasn't scared of the devil, I'm telling you.
Yeah, he was.
Leon's a good friend of mine.
Last time I saw Leon was when he come with you to Mobile?
Yes, he did. He sure did.
That was the last time I saw him.
He sure did. Leon, he's doing good. He he's a bad diabetic, but lost a ton of weight and doing a lot better. And I talked to him not too long ago. Him and Rose gave me a call over here. But Leon was a good friend. He was good to me, and especially when I got hurt the first time, he was good to me. Come by my place and out of the blue. Kathy said, "Leon's here." He backed up and he unloaded groceries for us that you just wouldn't believe. I mean, he was good to me. He's a good friend. We did a lot together, fished together, and we just had a lot of good times together. Give us another name, sir.
The next one, and this again was a local guy. I think Bobby told me he was from Elberton, and probably would have done more and had traveled more if he, unfortunately, he was killed young, and that's Doug Scoggins.
Oh gosh,
yep.
I never got to see Doug work. I've only seen pictures of him, but from everybody that I've heard talk about him, for a guy his size, that he was a very good hand in the ring for a guy his size.
I know the first night I met him, God, that had to be in the 70s, 71.
Yeah, he died in 72, Mike?
72, yeah.
Yeah, he died in 72 because it was before I actually, I mean, I was running errands for the office, but it was before I actually got in the ring, so I knew it was in that neighborhood.
They booked him in Statesboro, and that's the first time I ever met him. I wrestled him in Statesboro. And anyhow, he really come along good. He really did well. He was going to go, I think, the next week, wasn't it, Bobby, to New York?
Well, he was going to Japan, right? I think.
He got a starting date in New York.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I knew somebody had told me that Ernesto had helped him get a tour of Japan too. You know, Tom kind of took Doug under his wing and was really, trying to help him.
Kissy.
Yeah, Kissy. He was him and Wayne Cowan were roommates. They lived over off of Cleveland Avenue, Sylvan Road there in Atlanta. And he was the night he got killed. I mean, just Rocket lived next door to Juan Caruso. And Caruso rode with Kissy to Valdosta the night they had the wreck. And they were when you left to go to Valdosta, you had to leave at 3:30. And to go to Augusta, you left at 4:30. I was with Rocket. We were at his apartment, and I was going to ride with him that night. And Wayne Cowan called and needed a ride. So me and Wayne Cowan and Rocket rode to Augusta. And Kissy did not get to Juan Caruso's until about 4:20. He was 50 minutes late picking him up.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they said that he went to sleep behind the wheel. Or that's what they assume happened. But I was with Rocket and Wayne and Augusta when they come out and made the, you know, they come out and told everybody. Well, they told Rocket, and then Rocket eased down there and told me, because he told me, he said, it's going to be a long ride home with Cowan tonight.
Did Caruso ever say what happened, Buzz?
It messed Caruso's mind up. He was asleep. But the best I could determine was Kissy went to sleep. And he eased over. There was a crane right there at Perry. They were working on a bridge, and they had a crane on a flatbed truck. And he hit that flatbed truck running over 100 miles an hour. And when Caruso woke up, when it hit, when the wreck started, and Caruso woke up and turned, I mean, when he turned and looked, Kissy's head was in the back seat. I mean, they said it was horrible.
I just can't even imagine.
Yeah, and Renesto came up on it. Tom was on his way to Valdosta too, and he was running late, and he came up on it because he's the one that called Augusta and told Charlie Smith, and Charlie broke it to the guys. But Mike, this is before I got into business, this is just things I've heard that have told me. As I said, they said Tom had Kissy under such a spell. You know, Tom was a great ribber, and you heard Joe Turner tell the story about Wayne Cowan, how he got him so messed up putting the money in the toll booth. They said he had Kissy under such a spell that some fan jumped in a ring one night, and Kissy went to punt this guy, and Renesto hollered, "Stop, don't do it." And they said Kissy stood there on one leg like a trained elephant in the zoo till Tom told him he could put his leg down.
That's about right. He was
they
in all.
Renesto just had him, you know. But they also said that they worked a match in Atlanta where Kissy did a hard way for Buddy Fuller. And Kissy was so trying to impress Tom with how tough he was, he let them sew him up and wouldn't let him use any anesthesia.
I remember that.
So he was a pretty tough customer.
I remember that.
Now, who actually broke into the business? Was it Tom and Jody?
You know, I don't think so. I think him and Wayne were working for an independent or a opposition promotion somewhere, and I'm sure Tom brought him in, but because he was booked. But I don't think that Tom actually trained him.
No, the next name, again, was somebody who traveled a little bit. I know he was down here for a couple of months, or maybe a month, the late 60s, and that's Darrell Cochran. Of course, Darrell was a full-time fire captain as well, so that kind of explains why he homesteaded so much, but that's another name, you know, that basically not seen much outside of Georgia.
Darrell was a nice guy. He was a real nice guy. He would make periodic trips. He'd go to Japan. He went to India. He'd make trips like that. But, yeah, as far as going to other territories and all, he might have ventured to Florida or something, didn't he, Bobby?
Yeah, he did, but he didn't stay gone long. He was a he was a City of Atlanta fireman, and that was his. I mean, that, he knew that's where his bread was buttered as far as his retirement, and that sort of stuff.
He tried to get Armstrong not to quit the fire department.
Yeah.
And Darryl did well. I think he had some rental houses and, you know, had a retirement. And he did well. He did all right.
Yep.
That was the last time I saw him was in Macon at something.
He came to the thing for two. I got some pictures.
That's when I saw him. That was the last. That's where I got some of you, too.
Yeah,
that was the last time I saw him.
And he, of course, he was his wife Louise, his widow Louise. You know, we still see her periodically. She comes to some of our get-togethers, and she's. Darryl did okay. Darryl was one of those people. He had a very, very dry sense of humor, and once you got to know him, he was a very funny guy.
He was. You had to get to know him.
Yes, you did.
I mean, you could take him the wrong way quick. But he wasn't like that. He really wasn't. I mean, he didn't mean it, you know.
No. He told the story one time, and him and Charlie Smith had both confirmed this. They were in the wrestling office used to be on the first floor of a parking garage on Houston Street in downtown Atlanta. And it was across the street from the White House where Paul Jones lived. And there was a telephone pole right outside the window of the office there, and they said that Darryl said that him and Charlie Smith were in there one day, and, of course, Charlie can confirm this story. He said some guy kept bugging him wanting to be a wrestler, and he said this guy walked up one day in front of the office, and he looked at that telephone pole and said he jumped up and he drop-kicked the telephone pole. And he said when he hit the sidewalk, he said they had to call whatever was the equivalent to 911 in that day to come haul this guy off because the guy couldn't move. Oh. Got some other stories about that office, but I can't tell them.
The next name on the list is somebody that I have never seen anywhere else other than, and you guys, neither one of you may know him, and that was Eduardo de Lynch. Does that name ring a bell to either one of you guys?
I think you just made that name up.
Yeah. Before my time.
Eduardo de Lynch.
Yep.
Now, what era was this?
Early 70s. Teamed a lot with Roberto Soto. Now, there was a guy that works in here, and I know he worked in the 60s under the name of Eduardo Castillo. It may have been the same guy. They just changed his name. But, yeah, I've seen several results, and he wasn't just, you know, opening card. Like I said, he had a few main events with Soto, and he did some mid-card stuff, and was on the winning quite a bit.
Never this was in Georgia?
Name. Yeah, yeah.
Never heard that name ever
me
in
neither.
My life.
Well, how about Wild Man Davis? You guys ever heard of him? Not Tretch Phillips. Just somebody else, again, in the same era, early 70s.
Was it not Mike Davis?
No, that was way too soon for Mike. There was
a guy here that wrestled for a while named Wild Man Davis. If it's the same guy I'm thinking about, was he here about the same time Moondog Maine was here, which would have been around 75?
Or are we talking earlier, maybe a different guy? I'm thinking it was 74, 75, somewhere in that time.
Yeah, there was a guy here. I don't know his real name, don't know where he came from, but he was here for a while. He wasn't here long. He was a little bitty fella. I mean, if he weighed 190 pounds, he was lucky. But he had long, stringy hair, and he did the wild man thing. But that's the only guy I can think of. But I don't know. He wasn't here long, if I've got the right guy in mind.
And then, of course, this is somebody Bobby will know, because he only worked for All South, that I know of, and that's Bearcat Wilkerson.
Yeah, nice guy. Had 9 kids.
Who was he from, Bobby?
Statesboro.
That is correct.
What about Rita Wright? Had a stamp pad with a stamp with his name on it, and if he wanted to, he'd stand outside the Babyface dressing room. If he'd come and ask for an autograph, he'd hit that stamp on the stamp pad and stamp your program.
Did he pass away?
I heard at the end of last year that he did. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard he had, did. He I don't couldn't remember when, but I had heard that he had passed away.
I don't know where I heard that, but I thought I heard that.
Here again, fair sized guy, but he was short. He was not a tall guy. And but he was. We had a lot of guys when Gunkel was in business like that. We had a. We're probably ahead of our time, but we had a little division, a junior heavyweight division. I mean, Cowan wasn't a big guy at the time. Ted was wrestling in that division. Bearcat Wilkerson.
You know, that was one of the best things going that Gunkel had. Really, it was.
Yeah.
It really was.
I mean, Ted and Bearcat were the two participants in the match in Columbus where Tracy Rivers wouldn't pick a winner, and he throwed them two discs down. But that was we had another guy here that was in that division that doesn't get a lot of talk. It was Al Valesco, the champ, wrestled under a mask.
Now, we talked about him. Is he supposedly still in Atlanta, Bobby?
Well,
we don't know.
You know, there's several of those guys we'd love to find. We'd love to find out about him. We'd love to find out about Cisco Grimaldo. They tell me that El Mongo is still in Gwinnett County somewhere. I think Mike has had some talks with a grandson or something trying to find him.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And you know, there's a lot of those guys that we'd love to find out what happened to them, to let them know that we still care about them, and we'd love to have them as part of our family, and but I don't really know what happened to him.
Don't know either. Do you know the name Bobby Garrett?
Oh, yeah, kid out of Macon, yeah.
Yeah. This is the only place I know he ever wrestled. I may be wrong.
He worked for Forsum.
Did he really?
Yeah, he came in. In fact, he had a main event match in Birmingham against Fuller and against Ron Fuller himself. They were doing a bounty hunter thing, and Bobby came in under a mask.
He was from Macon, wasn't he?
Yes. Yep. Yes. Pretty good little hand.
Yeah, he was. He really was.
Yeah.
He really was.
I'll tell you another guy from Atlanta that never went anywhere. Big kid. His name was Buck Brannigan.
Yep.
Big kid.
I remember that name.
Big kid, had a little talent, and Ole tried to get him to go to Charlotte because he told him, he said, look, he said, I think you have some potential, but you're never going to make it here at home because, you know, you're at home. You're going to have to go somewhere else and get a push. And he said, I'm going to get you booked into Charlotte. And the guy didn't want to travel. He did not want to leave home. So he never went.
I remember that name.
Yeah.
That was in the last. Guys that when I was coming over to do TV jobs, there were Gerald Finley was another one.
Gerald Finley,
very good hand, but I think his size hurt him.
There again, he wasn't a big fella. Yeah.
I think you talking about Bobby Garrett. I think Bobby Garrett's what he'll best be known for is Ric Flair breaking his arm during a TV match.
That is correct.
He fell wrong with that suplex and broke. Broke his upper arm.
Gerald Finley.
Bobby was around.
What happened to Finley?
Don't know. Last I heard, he was still here in Atlanta.
Isn't that something?
But there again, he never went anywhere. There were some of the guys that, of course, Ken Timms. He turned out with a very good career. Dale Veazey. He went through a ton of gimmicks, and he wound up working with WCW for a while as one of the state troopers or whatever they were called. And he had Dale Veazey had a partner that I was told they owned a gym together in Carrollton, I think it was. A guy named by the name of Bob Brown. You remember
Bob
him,
Brown.
Bobby?
Bob Brown.
I trained him. Trained him and Veazey.
Really?
They had a gym in Cordell.
Okay, for the Cordell?
Yes.
He and Veazey did a gimmick. They worked for Fuller, and I know they worked in Puerto Rico as the Alaskan Hunters.
the thing that killed me about Bob Brown was you never know what he knew what he was going to look like when he'd show up on TV.
You ever seen that? Could you believe it? It was unbelievable.
One week he'd show up with blonde hair. He looked like a miniature version of Dick the Bruiser because he was real muscular. Next week he'd have his head shaved.
That was him. He didn't know who he wanted to be.
Well, you know, and you know these guys, you know, some of these guys that that would come to TV, you know, I mean, there was a kid out of Rome, Georgia named Marty Lundy that used to come do jobs on Atlanta TV.
Isn't that something?
Yep.
Turned out to have a pretty good career when he became Arn Anderson, you know, so just right place, right time.
But here's two names I want to throw at you guys because I thought they were both good workers and they didn't look the greatest in the world, but as far as actual work in the ring, they were good. The Owens brothers, Bob and Len Owens. You guys remember them?
Who?
Bob and Len Owens.
Don't ring a bell.
No, I don't know them.
Yeah, they did. They were, again, that bunch that used to be there on Saturday morning. In fact, Bob Owens, the first time I met him, he spent about 3 or 4 weeks down here refereeing for Fuller. And it was either late 70s or early 80s the first time I met him. And then he was he gained a lot of weight and got real heavy. And was but he was doing, you know, TV jobs. He had a brother named Len Owens. And Ken Timms had his brother Ed was another one that was there. Marvin Turner, you remember that name?
Marvin Turner, sure do.
Jack Poor.
Jack
Warner's buddy, yeah, they.
Roger Howell was a guy from up in, I think he was from Chattanooga.
No, Roger was from, he was from the, what's the town up there where all the Fullers came out of?
Dyersburg.
Well, Dyersburg. He was from that Dyersburg area. Yep.
And Ole Anderson's favorite, Rick Craven.
Oh, geez.
I saw. Bobby, I don't know if you was at Columbus TV that day, that DiBiase walked him over in the dressing room.
Oh.
Him over.
Ole knocked him out on Atlanta TV. I mean, knocked him. Wouldn't let him dress in the dressing room. I mean, the kid had no business. He should have known better, but he was just stupid. Ole made him dress in the bathroom. Ole wasn't even going to work on TV that day. When he seen the kid and realized who he was, he says, "I'm working." Charlie Smith refereed. He knocked the kid out. I mean, knocked him out. And he barred his arm. Charlie's going, "You want to give up? Want to give up?" And the kid was knocked out. I mean, he couldn't talk. And Ole looked at Charlie and said, "I'll tell you when he gives up." And it was so bad that the lady that ran the camera at the TV station came out from behind the camera and had stuck her head under the ropes into the ring screaming, "You're killing this guy. You're killing him. You need to stop." I mean, it was pretty bad.
Wasn't the story behind that, though? He walked in there and demanded that Ole let him go over on TV?
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
I thought that's what I'd heard.
I don't know.
Whatever happened to him?
Oh,
Was that him, Bobby?
I don't know. Well, he worked Atlanta TV. They booked him in Griffin one night. And I don't know why. They booked him against Pat Rose. And I went down there to referee. And I wasn't refereeing very regular. I was working in the office. I just went when they needed somebody and didn't have anybody to go. And I went this particular night, and it was the first match. And the guy's horrible. I mean, he was just It was one of those things where I was ashamed that he was in our business.
Right.
And they went in the ring and he was trying to heel and he backed Pat Rose into the ropes and he went to hit him and you would have thought he was swatting a butterfly when he hit him, and it flew all over me. And I jumped in there, and I pushed him. I almost pushed him down, and I told him, and I said, "The next time you go to hit this guy," I said, "if you don't hit him, the headline in the Griffin paper in the morning is going to be referee whoops wrestler." I said, because I said, "I'm going to be on you myself." I said, "This is crazy." And I turned around to Pat Rose, and I said, "Snatch him and beat him, and let's get out of here." And, I mean, it was awful. I mean, here's a kid that would bleach his hair blonde, sit on the front row, scream, cuss, spit on us, and then the next thing I know, he's standing in the dressing room of the TV station. I mean, he got booked because he didn't use his real name. He used some other name, and he was able to talk the talk enough to convince Ronnie West or whoever was booking TV at the time to book him, and then he showed up and everybody seen who he was. So that's how all that got started.
He didn't last long.
No, he did not.
Well, guys, we are out of time. Just wanted to go ahead and announce next week we're going to be joined by Scott Teal, owner and publisher of Pro Bar Press. By far, at least in my opinion, the best wrestling books that have come out, Scott has had his hand in, and he has done some great ones. And Scott's going to join us and tell us about his days, early days in the business, how he got started down in Florida with fan magazines and stuff like that. And then he ended up working for Nick Gulas as his PR guy and everything. And so he's going to join us. And then in 2 weeks will be the Gulf Coast reunion to be going on. So we're going to take that week off. But unfortunately, it's going to be without pay. So we're going to have the night off without pay. So. Yeah, I hate you're going to miss the reunion, but I understand how real life interferes sometimes.
Yeah, I plan for next year for sure. I'm just blessed
with
a lot of stuff
here.
Going on. So,
well, I'm planning on being. I'm not going to. I'm going to take the night off, but it's going to be with pay because Mars, you're going to buy supper that night, Bubba.
And that'll work. That's the least I can do. Guys, as always, it's been great, and we will we'll do this again next Thursday and be joined by Scott Teal.
Looking forward to it, y'all. See y'all next week. Bye-bye.
Good night, guys.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.